Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to
Do It Again.
Fucking brilliant. Never interrupt a man. Welcome to the latest episode of 20 Minute Tims. I'm your host, Jamie. And I'm joined, of course, by Stephen.
What is happening?
And Melly.
Yes.
Who is the greatest striker since Henrik Larsson? That is the question that's been on Celtic's fans' lips for years and years and years. And luckily, we answer it on our latest exclusive Patreon video. You can get that as well as plenty of other exclusive content like podcasts and writing and other videos at patreon.com/20minutetims. Stephen, Melly, the transfer window is upon us, and for the first time in years, we are not frantically scrabbling about, awaiting for someone to come in to fill a position that we desperately need filled in before the window slams shut in 24 hours. We're not like waiting for the old Lowellism that goes something along the lines of no more business to be conducted outside. We were all furious about it because, unusually, Celtic have done not bad this transfer window.
Yeah, and not only that, is that a lot of the players who have come in fact, all of the players who have come in this window have actually played as well already. So gone are the days where we're waiting months and months and months for these players to arrive after after they go through the crushingly inevitable, disappointing, he's just a project phase where he disappears, he goes on alone to Stirling Albion or something like that, and then is never seen again. That doesn't happen anymore. We get these guys and they're almost literally straight off the plane, straight into a strip and taking part in Celtic games. And do you know what? It's something we'll maybe get into as well as we talk about the shape of the squad as the window is literally about to slam shut. Take your hands away from the sill. Yes. It is about to slam shut. But it's things like being thrown straight into the team and straight into action straight away is making me look very differently on some members of the Celtic squad. It's not through no fault of their own. They haven't done anything well. That's kind of the point. But anyone who isn't contributing currently to the Celtic squad, it's not because they're being given time to settle in and all that. That doesn't happen. We are signing players and putting them straight into the Celtic first team. So it paints some players in a slightly different light.
It paints one particular member of the backroom team, or the boardroom team, sorry, Melly, in a particular light for me, because historically, we were always told January's a difficult time to do business. Ever since we've been doing this podcast, under many, many managers, January is typically a difficult time of year to do business. The last two January transfer windows under Ange Postecoglou have blown that myth out of the water.
Yeah, it seems that since Ange's come in, every myth's been blown out of the water that Peter Law told us all those years, and we knew it was crap, but we had to take it. And again, brought in players early, bought them in before the deadline was even allowed to bring players in. And we've seen it again that we need to get a player out before we can bring player in nonsense doesn't exist. The getting players in January is the most important window because we've got the Champions League qualifiers, yet we didn't bring any in, or we'd bring them in for 6 month loans. So it's brilliant to see. It's how a football
heady days.
I kind of miss it now. I don't. But it's good to see, because this is the way a big football club operates, and Celtic are finally doing that. They are finally doing things the right way. We sat here a couple of weeks ago with rumours that Giakoumakis was away. I'm like, what happens if Kyogo gets injured in a game and then Giakoumakis away, we've only got one striker? So far, it turns out that O's come in and Giakoumakis hasn't even been confirmed yet. As we sit here, it might be by the time we finish. So look, it's great the way Celtic are doing business. And for the first time in a long time, the only scrambling Celtic are possibly going to do in deadline day is to get some of the deadwood out. Deadwood's harsh, but guys that aren't going to be playing football, just get them out the squad and tidy it up a bit, because the squad is looking mighty fine.
Okay, but let me just ask you the question. Are we stronger if all things remain the same and Giakoumakis leaves, as you say, more or less getting confirmed today? It's just not officially happened when we sat down to record this. But are we weaker or stronger than we went into the window? Because there's still some proving to do with Alistair Johnstone. I think what we've seen from Alistair Johnstone is he's a competent fullback, but I don't think what I've seen from him so far, I can sit here and confidently say, Stephen, he's better than Juranovic.
No, it's too early for that. It's
far too early for that. Yeah. And there's some ground to make up with O. He's not played a lot of football recently. He did pre-season, obviously. He's going to have a bed and in period, all that sort of stuff. The same things that happened. So you're looking at it going, well, okay, we're happy we've done the business, but that cliche, are we stronger going into the window, leaving the window than we are going into it? Technically, I'm not sure we are.
It really depends. I think it's far too early to make judgments on that. I'm happy with the business that's been done. I could be doing, if I'm being picky, I could be doing with tidying it up a little bit and getting rid of a few more as well, because I find that, you know, there's all these suggestions that these players are going to go out on loan, but I find loans to be just sort of anxiety inducing. I find like us having players out on loan,
for you or for the player?
For me. Right, just having guys like Sorrow and Scales and a Yeti and all that still on the books of the club, I find it to be like putting them out on loan is like having a big pile of admin sitting in your desk and you're procrastinating. You just can't look at it just now. You're going to need to deal with it at some point, but you're just kind of shoving it further over to the desk. So I could be doing with getting rid of
there is a lot of players in the team just now. The squad is a bit bloated. It's a bit Morelos at the moment, isn't it? I mean, first team training, there must be like there must be more players at the moment participating in first team training for Celtic than most managers have had, I think. When you think about the sheer numbers of bodies that are all considered first team players, you know.
Well, you only need to look at the strength of the bench on the weekend there on Sunday to look at how many good players we've got in that squad, and there are several that can't get anywhere near that as well. We've only got space for 9 subs, and some perfectly fit players aren't getting anywhere near it. So you know, sacrifices have to be made there. It's
kind of spread thin over certain areas as well, because a bit like Morelos, we have got the flabby middle, you know, in the midfield.
You can't choose where the fat sort of accumulates there. Yeah, but I suppose the benefit of not being a tubby goal getter and being a professional football squad is that you can choose where the flab goes.
You can target.
You can't do anything about this. We can work on stubborn areas that Morelos simply can't. We're getting slightly thin in some areas. I look at the squad on Sunday against Dundee United and we look a little bit light on fullbacks now.
No Burnaby.
Burnaby wasn't in the squad. And whether it was a slip from Ange that he only mentioned Ralston as being unfit.
Don't think Ange slips.
No, very, very rarely.
Do you think at this stage we should maybe have no concern? I mean, everything's relative, right? We're not sitting here panicking about the squad, but should we have concern about the fullback area? Because an injury to Greg Taylor, say Greg Taylor gets wiped out and he's out for the rest of the season, I mean, you're left really with only Burnaby who can play left back.
Hey, phone Lenny, Callum McGregor left back.
Callum McGregor could take tips, but would that concern you, Melly, if we were struggling in the fullback areas, as we've pointed out? Do you think Ange doesn't have a lot of trust in Burnaby? You have trust in Burnaby?
No, I don't. But again, like I said, I think looking back, I didn't have much trust in Greg Taylor and he turned out to be a good player. Mm. So Celtic are in a position where all they've got is domestic honours right now. So to go out, spend, what, $3.5 million, whatever it was, on Burnaby in the summer and then write him off 6 months into it with an adaption period would be a bit harsh, bringing somebody in. I think we owe him, giving him to the end of the season at least, maybe into next season. The only thing is, if Greg Taylor does get injured, that's why Juranovic was so good to have, because he could play either side. But Mikey, Alistair Johnstone might be able to slot over there, and with Tony Ralston back, it does give us that option. So I think we'll be okay. Greg Taylor doesn't get injured a lot, and when he came back in the weekend, it just felt like, I feel a bit more comfortable now he's there. It just seems like he's a guy that should be in the team. So, yes, we're a bit light on it, but how far do you take that? Because Ange brought this guy in, so he obviously seen something in him, and then we're 6 months down the line, maybe we should just get somebody in case. These guys need to play football to prove themselves, don't they?
But you're right, but I think part of the problem is we wouldn't even be having this conversation if he was picked to sit on the bench last week. But from what we can see, as he's fit, able to play, but what we did was we went into a game with no defensive fullback cover, which raises the questions, does Ange think he's getting an issue here? Is he doing the old sending a message to the board? I mean, he did say he was pressed on whether or not that was all the business that was going to be done, and he says, look, I don't know, I could say no and everyone would be bored, but if any opportunities come up, we might take them. So we never know, there might be conversations going in the background. I really want another fullback, because I don't think Ange is a sort of manager that does half measures, doesn't he? He's going to take half measures from his players, and I doubt he'd take half measures for the board. I think if he went and says, look, you need to get me a fullback here, because that boy Bernabe might be 6 months away from starting in my team, he's not good enough to start week in, week out, and we can't rely on him, you need to get me another fullback, I think he would want it done.
Probably, but being playing dick advocate here, can the board not turn around and say to him, look, we spent £3.5 million on a fullback for you that you wanted. We had Josh Doig in Scotland, who you could have got as well, and has went on to play very well in Italy. So we got you the guy you wanted, and now you're turning around here. Like Celtic should be in the position where they can do that, but Greg Taylor's a good player. I still think Bernabe can be a good player. Going out and getting somebody else in could further dent his confidence. So it's all ifs and buts, because if Greg Taylor gets injured, but if he doesn't, and then we've got two left backs on the book that don't play, we've got, what, six midfielders, you'd say, the guys that started at the weekend and the guys that were on the bench, and then you've still got Idiguchi, McCarthy, Abelgaard. These are all Ange signings as well. So he's brought, this is Ange's team, there's no denying that now. He's brought in a whole raft of players. So I think we are strong enough right now to get to the end of the season and get
influential,
the trophies.
Influential Celtic podcaster suggests rift in back in boardroom.
Hylo's back.
Bust up over fullback cover between the board and Ange Postecoglou. Cracked crest.
What's Laxalt up to? That's what I wanted. What's John Joe Kenny doing at the moment?
Can't say his name.
We haven't spent the last couple of weeks talking up the virtue of not running around looking for loan fullbacks and all that. And
I think, to quote the podcast, I think it might have been you or Mayor, but I think it may have been your exact words not 1 week ago was, I mean, usually when we're in this position, we're scrambling about seeing what fullback we can get on loan. 1 week later and no sign of Bernabe, and we're about to say the immortal words, maybe we could scramble about and see.
It's just, you never want to be scrambling about, but you kind of feel left out when you're not scrambling about, don't you? Because, look, we don't need a fullback, and then again, you look at it like, come on, the B team must be doing something. There's Matthew Anderson, who's the captain of the B team. He's a good prospect. I think he's injured now, a good left back. So there are players there, and yet we're still, why don't we just go out and get a wee loan sign in? Because a week ago we're like, right, we need a striker, and then we should be all right. And now that we've got a striker, like, oh, come on, a wee bit more.
That's another thing that Millie's touched on, not to derail the point that you're originally going to make, but I think it's something I don't want to drift too far away from. With all this transfer activity and all these players we've getting in the bloated squad, particularly in midfield, are there concerns maybe that we're not giving a pathway to our best young players into the first team? Now, it's easy to say none of them are good enough, that's why we're out signing them. But that can't be the case of every single player in the B team. There must be some of them who we have our eye on that we think can make moves into the first team at some point.
Yeah, and in this specific case as well, obviously you only want to promote these players when you can, and not out of necessity, and not out of a rush, not out of, you know, being desperate to fill a space in the first team squad. You want them to be there on merit. But in this specific case, all we are really asking for is a little bit of cover here. All we're really looking for is a bit of a fail-safe in case Greg Taylor is injured. We fully expect Greg Taylor to play the majority of the games for the rest of the season. But as far as I can see, there's no real cover for the position in the absence of Bernabe. Now, I suppose that we could be looking too much into it, and Bernabe could be back in the squad for the Livingston game during the week. We don't know here, but with reading between the lines, and we can only go on what Ange said, he didn't mention Bernabe at all in the list of injured players, which only extended to Tony Ralston. So there seems to be a bit of a problem there. So I would be happy either way with the promotion of a B team player to first team action for, you know, just for the sake of covering that position, or again, we've joked about it, but the scrabbling around looking for a loan. But I really wouldn't be against the loan of a young player. Just, again, all we're looking for is a stopgap. The difference with this is we are often rolling our eyes and talking about it for years. Look, we're talking about the John Joe Kenny thing for years afterwards, right? That's because
Melly shivers.
that's because we are throwing these guys into the first team because we've got absolutely nothing else. We've sold a player in that position, and when he go out and get a terrible loan to fill that, all I'm looking for is a backup to Greg Taylor.
I'm sure I read some galaxy brain level cake. Right. Did someone not say, no offence, if this is you, because I genuinely can't remember if you're watching this podcast, but was there not a someone doing the rounds, a blog or something doing the rounds early on in Juranovic's career saying John Joe Kenny was just as good? I'm sure that was one of the wild takes that I read online. Just on the sort of wider point about the pathways, do you think it is important? Do you think if you were a young player on the Celtic B team just now, you'd be looking going, God, anytime this manager needs a player, he just goes out and buys one. They're never coming to us.
Well, recently, one of the debut I mentioned at the start of this, one of those includes Boson Lawal, who has been promoted from the B team. Rocky Vatt has had some first team minutes as well. So really, I don't think there's a problem in that regard, promoting from that level. But it's just the fact that, you know, we do need a left back. We need left back cover, and that might not be quite the right time for it. As I speculated, what you want is for that guy to prove his worth and then be promoted that way. Lawal has come in, even though there's four centre-halves in front of him. At the time, Jens was in front of him as well, and he's played some minutes. But I don't know what the left-back situation is just now.
I wasn't really meaning specifically left-back, because all over the pitch, I mean, when you're looking at that midfield, we've got loads of... I mean, that is probably the most... That central midfield area. You're looking at... I mean, you're even looking at that, Melly, going, with the best will in the world, right? Idiguchi, right, still at the club. I don't know if he'll play a single game for Celtic before he goes a single 90 minutes. He's probably going to go. Abelgaard probably going to go. But you're just looking. I'm even looking at guys like Iwata. I'm going, how much game time can we really? I'm not writing the signing off. You know, by no manner of means am I writing the signing off. And I heard Ange talk about him, and he says, look, McCallum McGregor got injured. We put in Matt O'Reilly into that position, but it's not his natural position. And we kind of realise we don't have a natural fit for when he's injured. And another thing it offers us is a potential to look at a formation change. So this is maybe something that we're going to look at in the future. Long term, we might see Celtic playing a different way. But you just think, how much game time can we realistically offer half the guys in our midfield? I mean, even with Aaron Moy's form, it's very, very difficult to dislodge any of the current three guys.
Yeah, it's going to be difficult, but that's the challenge you set. And we've seen in the past that players who know they're going to play every week don't perform well. And especially with Celtic, with so many games, Callum McGregor's a bit of an exception because he rarely misses a game, but then all of a sudden he gets injured and it's, oh, we don't have a natural player in there, or we did Abelgaard, but we never seen him because he wasn't good enough. So to have somebody of, you're never going to get somebody as good as Callum McGregor, but to have an able deputy is very important for Celtic. And it pushes Callum McGregor on, it pushes the other midfield on. If there is talk of a midfield change or having two sitting players, then there's going to be one guy ahead of them. So there's three players there going, who's going to get dropped? Is it going to be me? So it ups the game for everybody else. And look, this is what we want. We want two players for every position. We cry out for it. And Celtic seem to have that now pretty much all over the pitch. And yet we're still looking at, maybe we could improve somewhere. That's what you want. You want to be looking to improve on quality. Celtic haven't had that for a long time. And just when we think back to when we get onto the game later, this time last year and for the whole season, every game you were really anxious about Celtic getting the victory because there was no margin for error at this point. Like this time last year, we had that win against Dundee United where Abada scored in the last minute. Celtic were down to 10 men, didn't have anybody that could come on to affect the game really. Ben Doak came on to try and change it. And now a year later, Celtic are flying, drop points in two games this season, have a really good squad, and you're going, this, how far we've come is because of the squad. The signings we made in January, the signings we made in the summer, and the signings now, Celtic are pushing on to be a really competent squad because there is no such thing as a first 11 anymore, and Celtic could play 60 games a season if they are successful, and with this squad I expect us to be.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
3, 2, 1. Happy New Year from our friends at Manscaped. The ball has officially dropped, but that doesn't mean you have to drop the ball on your balls in 2023. Whether you had a New Year's kiss or not, the leaders in the below-the-waist grooming have got you covered for your much-needed resolution of bringing sexy back. Join the 7 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with our exclusive offer. Go to manscaped.com and use code TIMS for 20% off and free shipping. Let's have a toast for a new year, a new you, with no pubes.
It's a new year, new balls with the global leaders in below-the-waist grooming. This year, take your package to the next level with a Performance Package 4.0 and other premium wet goods. Inside the Performance Package 4.0, you'll find a signature Lawnmower 4.0. The advanced skin-safe technology reduces cuts and nicks on your delicate parts. It also comes equipped with a 4000K LED spotlight that will shine a light to the promised land 2023 looks to be. Cheers to new balls in 2023.
Get 20% off and free shipping with the code TIMS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use the code TIMS. Time to feel sexy and free this 2023 with Manscaped. Dundee United v Celtic, Stephen, midweek. I think that was probably the strongest bench. Apologies, by the way. I've got a retainer in, so that's why I'm sounding like Sean Connery from time to time. Okay, I just have to face it, yeah. Right? That was the strongest bench I think I've seen in a Celtic team for a long, long time.
Yeah, it was incredibly strong. Any number of options on there. It was really just a case of who was going to get on rather than, you know, apart from Scott Bain, and I don't really know what's happened to Sigurdsson in the last few squads. Not that it really matters. It's just really a kind of placeholder. I don't suppose it matters too much who's, you know, filling in as the sub-keeper. But apart from Bain, it's all relatively new signings that are in there. It's mostly Ange players that are in there as well. Forrest and Turnbull, who have been around for quite a long time anyway, but it's a really, really strong squad and full of attacking options. It must be really difficult to play against these teams, or for these teams rather, because you look at how they lined up against Dundee United, and the only quibble I would have had with the lineup is over Abada starting. When we've got so many options, we've got Haksabanovic and Maida, who didn't make it into the starting lineup in this one, and another day they will. I understood that because Abada's record against Dundee United is absolutely ridiculous. Off the top of my head, having not consulted the stats, I can think of about 6 goals he scored against Dundee United. He only signed at the start
he's
of last season.
He's getting better, by the way.
Abada, I've noticed that. He was quiet in that game, to be honest, but I've noticed a marked improvement in some of his dribbling, some of his decision-making recently. I'm really encouraged by that. But it just goes to further strengthen the plenty of options we've got out there. But the bench was absolutely tremendous. And it must be so demoralising to... Certainly were in control of the game the whole time, but you at a certain point, if you're only 1-0 down in a game against Celtic, you think, well, we're still in this. And then they bring on 3 subs and you look at the quality of the players that's coming on. It must be absolutely infuriating, really, to play against Celtic.
It must be demoralising more than just when you see the team, the lineup, and then you see the bench, which a couple of managers have had a lot to say about. I feel like this is going to be the next battleground. The Celtic budget is the next battleground. But I like it because it's not even what... It's 30th of January as we sit here and all the excuses are getting in already. They're getting the excuses in already. That'll be the big excuse at the end of the season. They can't compete with third budget. of shit. Win more, get paid more, that's how it works. But another demoralising aspect, Melly, of playing against Celtic is just the control we have over these games.
Yeah, as I was saying last season, you were always anxious, oh, we need to win. And then the further along it goes, you're like, oh, come on. But when I got to half time yesterday, I was like, right, okay, we're going to win. Because Celtic were dominant in the game, created decent chances, and you just thought, right, it's going to come because we've got so many players that now can change a game. I felt just from the start, you got the feeling Jota's on one today. He's on one. He had that wee lovely nutmeg out in the wing. He had a wee flick over as well. It just looked like he's really coming back into Jota form. I don't think he's been in terrible form. He's just not been on Jota form.
And addressed it after the game. Yeah, I know, God's sake. He addressed it after the game, and it was something we've spoken about, but he says he's not quite at peak fitness yet, and that kind of explains that wee bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. That old sickness bug that was going through the team, and I think Stephen said you looked a bit thin recently, but when you see him these days, this is what we're after from Jota. He was absolutely brilliant, and it's not just the goals and the assists he brings that, but it's that trickery and being able to go to a game and say, I'm looking forward to watching him play, because you can see Hatate, you know it's going to be a pass or something with Jota. It's that old school magic that he has that probably nobody else in the team has that. So it's just looking forward to that. I thought he was great. And once again, Aaron Moy, just a midfield masterclass, just starting to think, right, okay, last season you didn't have to play much to get Player of the Year, so Aaron Moy's definitely in my shout with winning Player of the Year this season.
I mean, it's a good shout for Player of the Year, but we definitely don't give him it, because he will have to do some sort of interview. Definitely stop giving him Man of the Match awards. Aaron, we do love you. You need to turn the Instagram comments on, though. We're not going to back down from this. But man, the boy has no mic skills.
No, absolutely not. And he must roll his eyes when he gets the Man of the Match.
When he gets him, what's Arnar?
It's like he was in the room.
Yeah. That's Aaron Moy when he sees he's won Man of the Match.
Arnar. Yeah. Aaron Moy, I've got a bony pick with Aaron Moy right enough because, right, yeah, goals, assists, penalties now.
Yeah.
Keeper bamboozling crosses that led to Jota's amazing goal. We'll talk about that as well. All that, right? Aye, whatever. But does he ever spare a single thought for guys like us who need to sit here and come up with different ways to talk about how brilliant he's been recently? Does he even think about it at all? Ignorant, really.
Shit game, would that go so far, Aaron, so we don't have to come here every single week and try and find new ways to say the same thing about how brilliant and how much we love you?
A revelation, absolute revelation. We have had many, many players, and I don't want to point him to him as if he's like some over-the-hill guy. Like, he was only 31 when he signed for Celtic, no, 36 or anything like that, but on that spectrum, we have had many, it's a vast spectrum, we have had many players in that bracket who have played a bit in England, played at a decent level, and then come to Celtic towards the end of their career, right? So if that end of the spectrum, if the lower end of the spectrum is like, I keep saying the word spectrum, but Carlton Cole, right, is down there, and Lubo is all the way at the other end of it. Aaron Moy is way, way along that end of it, right? And I'm pointing to the Lubo end for audio listeners. He is right up there with our, you know, hidden gem is not quite the right word for it, because everybody knew who Aaron Moy was, but a surprise package. Just genuinely one of, in fact, no, he's Celtic's best player since the World Cup. He's Celtic's best player of the last couple of months anyway. The most influential presence on the pitch. There's really nothing he can't do at the moment, apart from, as we said last week, the old patter on the mic. So, but no, it's getting to the point now where the midfield was so strong before he came to Celtic. It was so established. And it's now very difficult to picture a Celtic lineup without Aaron Moy in it. It's gone completely the other way, where I think it was the St Mirren game was the first time he'd properly, maybe not started, but it was the first time we turned up to a game and thought, oh, Aaron Moy's playing today, that's interesting, right? So it's gone from all the way from being surprised to see him in the lineup. See, the first time he doesn't start now, we're going to be like, Moy's not playing today.
I mean, do you think that Ange gets enough credit for building the style of team? Because if you look across the sort of style team, there's so many player profiles and characteristics that Celtic fans quite enjoy having in the team, that any football fan would have enjoying the team. But Celtic fans are Celtic fans. We've always liked the sort of tricky winger. We've got that in Jota, the guy with the trick in him. Everyone loves the sort of mercurial mad talent that tries crazy things in the midfield, and we've got that in Rio Itati. Everyone loves a lovable character, and we've got, and who's also happens to be an outstanding striker in Kyogo, and everyone loves the sort of cigarette smoking, reaching the end of his career, pings balls from anywhere, midfield. Everyone loves.
You're about to break into a rap there.
No, everyone. There's so many great characters in this Celtic team that there's just so much to enjoy and latch onto.
Yeah, it's why when Ange came in, and I really get tired of this Ange's system, and he won't fit Ange's system or whatever, because you're like, but he's a football manager. No football manager has a squad of players, has an inbuilt team where he goes, this guy that I play here must have this and this and this, and that's the only thing. Because when you look throughout Celtic squad, if you take any position, whether it be right back, Johnston and Ralston, completely different players, but both as effective when they're playing. Same with the centre-halves, Kobayashi and Carter Vickers, different players, but very skilled in what they do. Even the strikers, Jakimakis and Kyogo, Jota and Maeda, they're all completely different, and Aaron Moy just sums that up. He's different from every midfielder Celtic have got. Celtic have got six options in there, I'd consider, in the midfield, and you could pick any three and go, okay, I agree with that today. But with Aaron Moy, we've seen him come in, do brilliant. Like, we can't really imagine him starting. We've done it with Hatate, and Cal McGregor gets it, and it wasn't so long ago Matt O'Reilly we thought was going to be the next big thing. I still think he will be. So Celtic have got a squad of players that are all different, but all work in this system because they're all very good players, and none more so than Aaron Moy. I was very sceptical about it. I was like, maybe he's just a sort of stopgap until something, but right now you're like, he is a really class player, and he's going to be, I think, cult hero is harsh, because I think it'll be because he's not there for that long, whether it's this season or just this season and next, but I think he's going to be loved and really look back and say what a player he was, because he plays right now like it's simple to him, absolutely simple, and you can see what he's going to do, but nobody can get near him. I love watching it.
It's a good point you make as well about the makeup of the squad and Ange's system and all that, because if there was any still belief out there that Ange's only got one way of playing, if there's no plan B, plan B is make plan A better and all that, then if that was the case, then we've just spent a season or 6 months of last season with Matt O'Reilly basically playing every single game, and now he's been replaced for now, as we record this, with Aaron Moy. If it was the case that Ange can only play one way and has a set way of playing, then bringing in Aaron Moy for Matt O'Reilly would be such a compromise of whatever that system is, then the whole team would effectively fall apart, because they're nothing alike at all. They're nothing alike. And your real Hatate, is nothing like either of those either. So now it's another nail in the coffin for this belief that Ange's like a one-trick, Ange's ball, one-trick pony stuff. It's all complete rubbish.
What did you make of the cross?
Oh, the cross that Aaron Moyes, brilliant. And I've already described it as goalkeeper bamboozling, or however I put it a minute ago. And I think that's definitely true, because on the commentary, Andy Walker, I think they criticised the goalkeeper, or they questioned the goalkeeper. But I think the cross was so good that he didn't really know where to go. He did that thing where he looked as if he was going to try and tip it over the bar, but he completely lost his bearings, because it almost kind of went, almost went between the keeper and the goal,
I'm not giving Andy Walker praise here. I kind of do think there was a bit of a confusion in the goalkeeper. I did think... I think it was not confusion. I think it was laziness from the goalkeeper, if I can be honest, because the difference between what Jota did and what the goalkeeper did was Jota kept his eye on the ball the whole time, whereas I think the goalkeeper just went, it's gone over. And he just sort of gave up on it. But that being said, even if he did keep his eye on it, very difficult to intercept it anyway, because it was kind of over him too high, and then by the time it dropped to Jota just had to nod it in.
You've just reminded me of something that happened to me when I was in primary school. Not to me, but I was involved in a game.
I hope it's not dark.
a primary school football team where I think we beat a team 17-0, right? It was ridiculous. And one of the goals was a rocket from... it seemed like a far out. We were only kids, so it's probably about 10 yards, right?
But like that Gaza goal in the charity game, but your head is a rocket.
Flew into the top corner, and the whole way the keeper kind of went like that, as if he had it covered, as if he was waving it over the past the post, flying into the top corner. So I suppose in many ways that's what that keeper did there. But credit to Jota as well, because a lot of the talk has been on the cross and the goalkeeper making a bit of a mess of it. But see, when you watch the goal back, that... the posts from Jota's angle, from his point of view, the posts must have been almost in single file, one behind the other, and he somehow still managed to get the ball between them. I don't really know how he did it, to be honest. Kind of reminded, it's nothing like the execution of it. Do you remember Cavani's header at Celtic Park, where he sort of bent it into the top corner? It was similarly sort of physics-defying to that. So I don't know how he did it. Not famed for his heading ability, but he absolutely got that pinpoint accurate.
I love Jota playing and Larson-esque in it, because it's a difficult one because he doesn't even get any curve on the header either. He just manages to nod it in, and it's simple that the keeper could have been, when the keeper's backtracking like that, you can take your eye off the ball for a split second and see if he'd done that at all. He wouldn't have got the opportunity to score. So it's a lovely header, just cushioned right into the corner, and Celtic seem to get these goals now at great times. We've seen it all season. If we don't get the early goal, we'll get it before half-time. If we don't get that, we'll get it straight after half-time. And it kills teams, because I remember Andy Walker saying as soon as the second half started, look, Dundee United have defended well, but it's going to be very difficult to keep that up for the whole 90 minutes, the whole concentration, and not making a mistake. And you show weakness in Celtic pounce. And even then, it was a bit of quality from Celtic that they got the breakthrough as well, because, again, Aaron Moyes, a ball to him, and the defender knows he's going to shield it, but he's so good at doing it that he just shields it in utter slow motion and whips this ball in. And there's Jota, and it was just what Jota deserved for his performance, and Moyes as well, for a great assist.
Sure, you want to do the refs?
Right, okay.
VAR. Right, yeah, there we go. I'm getting sick of this.
Yeah, back in the news again.
We're going to have to pay money to the Super Mario Brothers guy if we keep using that jingle. I mean, there was Willie Collum in the Rangers game, which we don't need to talk about. Everyone knows about it. At this point, honestly, honest to God, it is more believable, right, that Willie Collum is the head of some massive Rangers-based conspiracy to cheat on behalf of Rangers, right? That, to me, is more believable and plausible now than the fact that someone so inept has been gainfully employed as a referee for 10 years. It's not possible.
Unfeasible, isn't it?
If you were doing any job in the world, if we were sitting here and we were podcasters and we forgot to plug the microphones in, if you're a bus driver and you missed stops, if you were an air traffic controller and planes smashed into each other... thousands of lives on a regular basis.
Every single week. Oh, no, again.
John! He's like that with the headset. I know. I missed it. Jesus, they're so small on this screen, I can't. It's scaff my case.
All we're asking for is consistency. That was three planes this time.
It's just unbelievable to me that he's remained in employment, being that bad at his job, because it's not true. But in the Celtic game, we had Don Robertson, and he's another one, maybe not as bad as Willie Collum, but Don Robertson, and we've said this in the podcast before, and you can search our Twitter feed or just Google Don Robertson. Every single game, every week almost, the complaints about Don Robertson is that he lets wild challenges go. That's his thing. He just lets mental challenges go. So
he's a right good football man.
Or he's half asleep. He's thinking about what he's having for his dinner. He's afraid to make a decision or something. There was the big one, the big discussion, the big talking point. I suppose we had the handball, which led to the penalty. And we had the Kyogo foul. You know, the Kyogo foul that was. So Stephen, come to you first. The handball led to the penalty.
Right. So the penalty, that handball was the most ridiculously blatant handball you'll ever see. Now, I have said very recently that very rarely do you get that. Very rarely do you get a handball that is so blatant that they just pass the ball in midair.
You know what? It was comforting to see such a blatant handball, because it was none of this body shapes or biomechanics or hand at the way. It's just, thanks, mate. I appreciate it.
And see, as part of VAR, right? See, when the ref's standing there with his wee monitor and he's over making his wee hand gestures and all that, can part of the VAR replays be the guy who perpetrated the foul's face? Because that's a big clue. He's sitting there looking as guilty as sin after that. He puts his hand behind his back as if, oh, no, it was there the whole time. A ridiculous thing. Yeah, obviously, that's a case where VAR has worked. But why did he miss it in the first place? It was right in front of him, an obscene handball, if anything. I don't know how it's possible to miss that. Because
Stephen, who was it we had earlier in the season at Hearts? What was the guy's name?
Michael Smith.
This was worse, and he shoved his arm right behind his back after he done it. Was it Willie Collum that missed that one?
Potentially.
No, I gave Kevin Clancy last week, I think it was, I gave him credit, well, not credit, but I gave him the benefit of the doubt for you know, I speculated that maybe it was just a case of, right, see if your hand is in a certain position. Maybe he's forced to give that. Maybe he's he's kind of running through the rules in his head and thinking, right, I need to give that because if I don't give it, maybe questions will be asked on why I didn't give it. So why then are the refs missing the fact that the hand's in the same position?
You see, you're giving Kevin Clancy credit last week, but it's got to the point now with these refs that were saying, well done, you didn't shit yourself. Well done, you didn't forget your boots. I mean, that's where we're at. You know, it's like the referee turned up without his uniform on and he's going to have to, referee the game in a sort of old PE kit out the back, odd socks and stuff.
It's ever seen that clip? Remember, there was, I think it was quite recently, where a ref gave a card, but he didn't have his card, so he just did the gesture. No. just an empty hand.
But this is like where we're going with this, and you're like, why did I miss it? And then, so you say, right, okay, you missed it, right, okay, that's what VAR was for, and the correct decision was reached in the end, right? Why was the guy not booked?
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that actually, yeah, because he'd already been booked. Yep. There was an incident, actually quite lucky with that, I thought, because Greg Taylor miscontrolled the ball and the guy just came in and fouled him for absolutely no reason, got the booking for it. So we kind of got lucky with that because Greg Taylor had given the ball away. But I remember noting that at the time, that a guy's booked and now he's deliberately handballed it in the box.
So is it because, presumably you can issue a yellow card off a VAR check, presumably?
Because
it caught him in the act. Yeah. So that was the one for me. So right, okay, you missed it. VAR kicks in, comes to the right decision. You still had another job to do and it was to book the guy and send him off. And it never happened.
No.
Melee handball.
Oh, definitely. And it's like, done. Come and have a look at this one and see what you've missed here. I mean, come on, mate.
Well, I think, do you think that's the attitude of the guy? Maybe it's too cooperative. Maybe it's like, okay, Don, we've got something I think you should look at if you want to head over to the VAR check. It shouldn't be that. It'd be, Don, get your arse over there.
Quick.
You can beep that out, Steven. You're going to get your arse over there and get another look at this because you have missed this. You know, I think it's maybe too pally-pally.
It probably is, to be honest. And it was a shocker that he missed it. The yellow card, it should have been a yellow card. I'm still not so sure on the other one.
The Kyogo
one, just coming up towards half time. When you've seen him cleaning out Kyogo, you're like, that looks pretty bad. Then when you see the keeper get something on it, but I'm kind of torn because I hate this. The keeper's got a right to protect himself. Mm. Nonsense. Like, no, he's got a right to go for the ball the same as the striker does. He doesn't have a right to do the Al McGregor knee up to the face or kick out. He doesn't have the right to do that. But again, you spoke about it on the match reaction, Jamie. Mm. If that happens in the middle of the park where Cameron Carter-Vickers goes for a header, wins it cleanly, but comes through the back of somebody, he's going to get a foul given against him. Yet when it happens with a goalkeeper, it's... but he does get a fist on it, but he doesn't get it cleanly, so and he takes out Kyogo. But I don't think I'm having the defender pushed him. That's just a shoulder to shoulder.
So I've thought about this since we did record the match reaction podcast, and I just can't help but think. So in the past I've never seen a penalty given for that where the keeper sort of clears the player out as he comes to punch it. Right, it's kind of one of these things that's kind of accepted in the culture of the game, that's kind of the keeper's area, and if you're going to challenge for it, then you're probably going to get whacked by a goalkeeper flying out, right? But he still took the player out.
Yeah.
And if that's a defender, and now I don't think it was ever going to be awarded as a pen in a million years, but I just think it's something we should look at going forward. Because we've seen plenty of times tackles where defender's got the ball, but he's also completely wiped out the attacker in the box. And it's like, well, you can't do that. You can't take the guy out of the game completely. And that's kind of what happened to Kyogo.
Yeah, the thing is, as much as it's unwritten, the geography of the pitch does matter. Rules are refereed differently depending on where the pitch is. For example, see when a pass is overhit and the defender is ushering it out of the pitch for about 10 yards, holding the guy off, making no attempt to play the ball. You can't do that anywhere else in the pitch, but you can just sort of usher it out, just holding them off, just basically obstructing. That's fine. But if you did that in the centre circle, what are you doing? I know that's a silly example, but the fact is, the where things happen in the pitch, it is part of, as you put it there, Jamie, the sort of culture of the game, the sort of unspoken rules do make a difference. I wasn't that bothered about it. I did see the case to make it a penalty, but also just wasn't really that bothered. I was surprised when they didn't give it. But the various things that were going on, I think all three people involved, the goalkeeper, the defender and Kyogo, all just went for the ball and all just sort of clashed. Now, the keeper was largely responsible for that, but I saw the case being made that either the defender pushed him, But then I'm trying to not be a hypocrite about that, because people claimed it was never a penalty when Jackie Marcus did that against Kilmarnock a few weeks ago. Mm. We all sat here and said it was a penalty when he bundled them over. But the same people who say, oh, that was never a penalty, are also screaming for the one for Kyogo. Very, very similar incident.
I think the penalty shout for Kyogo was soft, but having so much focus on this and so much glare, it did make me think about several times that I've seen a defender, as I say, win the ball in the box, clear the player out, and the ref going, but you can't really do that, you know, regardless of winning the ball. It's demoralising, not just for Dundee United, I think, in these games. It must be demoralising for Rangers as well. Just insofar as, moving away from the referees, Celtic pick up another 3 points, and we are kind of approaching running out of games to catch up territory, aren't we, Stephen?
The home straight.
What have
we got left? Is that 15 games?
Odd games, yeah.
Really quick season. Really quick. I think it might have been the World Cup, the weird kind of World Cup weirdness right in the middle of the season. So it feels like we've still got loads of the season to go, but 15 games. Celtic are doing their job. And it was something I'd thought about like quite recently when we won a game, but we're sitting kind of like scrutinising the level of performance. Celtic are just turning up and winning games and very, very comfortably, it has to be said as well. So Rangers, Beale's over there talking about how he inherited the gap and all that, but you know, let's look at that. The reason Hugh are in the job is because they literally employed someone to fix that gap, or else if they were happy with the gap, they would have just stuck with Giovanni Van Bronckhorst. So I would probably shut up about the gap if I were Ick Beale.
But everything that comes out of that guy's mouth is waffle. It's just waffle now.
Cockney twaddle.
Yes. Hey up, governor. That's a terrible, terrible, terrible thing. I was going to go at Cockney Street Urchin there and backed out before I could. He had to rescind his comment about Hearts. Maybe they said, like, Aberdeen are the third best team. Within that, they get battered off Hearts, battered off Darvel and battered off Hibs. So he had to rescind that comment again. And I can see he'll probably have to stop saying this thing about the gap.
Yeah, and stop talking about how lucky each manager is and isn't and all that. So it's just waffle from the guy. I'm not particularly impressed with him. And Celtic, as you say, games are running out now. Whatever Rangers are doing, again, to give them the grudging credit, they're winning games as well, but they simply can't do anything about the Celtic juggernaut from this season. Still only having dropped joint points in two games this season with 15 to go. It's extraordinary form.
Managerial waffle. So David Martindale's decided that he doesn't want to just leave that to Michael Beale. He wants a little bit of this. What was his quote, Stephen, about Celtic and like something about pound for pound or something?
Something along the lines of, and you know, I'm not quoting directly here, but if the Premiership was, if the table was done on points per pound spent, then Livingston would win the league. Do you know what? Team Scotland were awfully fond of handing out fake trophies, didn't we?
We absolutely
love it. Remember it was the Stephen Gerrard in his 80th minute or whatever it was?
Yeah.
If the game stopped on 80-something minutes, they'd be top of the league or whatever it was. Or there's another one as well, about when a manager starts, or see if the season had started when this manager started, then they'd be somewhere else on the table. We love all this absolute pish, don't we?
I'm getting a bit bored of David Martindale's shtick. I'm just a wee football manager. I don't know why. I'm just a wee guy out there trying to stick out cones and win games. You know, that don't bother me.
But some really spot on characters being portrayed tonight.
to be fair, though, to David Martindale's Livingston, maybe not the manager himself, but I suppose you have to be. We can be the bigger people on this. They're fourth with a game in hand over Hibs. It's quite remarkable.
It's damning for the league, I think, because Aberdeen...
Incidentally, did say his ambition this season was to finish 10th. Right. Come off it. Nobody's buying this, Martindale. But anyway, carry on.
My ambition for this episode is one download.
We'll just be podcasting that, don't know.
He's very, very effective. His team are very effective in what they do, but brutal to watch, aren't they? And I can't go at all. I said this to you, Jamie, I'm really worried about this league right now because there's Jim Goodwin, another guy lost his job. Hibs absolutely scalped him, and I don't think Hibs are any great shakes. No, I don't think their manager will be there much longer. And you look to the league and it's no right now, but going forward for next season, look, Rangers have improved since Beale came in. But where are teams going to take points off Celtic and Rangers next season? Because they're all dreadful, really, really bad. And for Martindale's Livingston, he beat Ange in the first game, but Celtic were in disarray then. And then, was he a point against Rangers, I think, as well? For a guy that goes on so much about, I'm no good at this job and whatever he talks about, like, go and do something about it. Go and take points off teams. Don't sit in and do it. But he's going to do that on Wednesday. Hopefully I don't have egg on my face when Celtic come up against him, because I really want Celtic to destroy his team. Yeah. Absolutely pump them. I don't like his managerial style. It's just me, and it's easy for me to say supporting Celtic, but that's not why you'd get into football for me. So go out and play some, but we don't have many teams in this country to do it.
This league is in a bit of a terrible state though, Stephen, isn't it? I think everyone outside the top three doesn't have a positive goal difference. There's like 10 there's 10 points separate the bottom team and the fourth team. There's just, I mean, begrudging as I am, for this to come across like credit in any way for Robbie Nielsen and Hearts, like outside Celtic and Rangers, it's Hearts and everyone else is miserable, miserable managers, no players really making any waves. And that's not being dismissive. We watch Celtic, obviously, every week against these teams. We keep an eye on the league, we rewatch the games. It's not like we're being completely dismissive about the rest of the league, but this is, in terms of managerial talent, playing talent, the teams outside the top three that are
teams
have
a bit of style. Like, teams, what would you say? Like, I can't name a manager going, this is how he plays. That you made me think. Like John Hughes was at Inverness, and you could say they play football. At least look, they get themselves in trouble sometimes because they don't quite have the players to do it. But you're never going to have that at Inverness. Instead, he stuck to his guns and played football and came away with a couple of trophies. Nobody else is doing that.
And it's a bit like a sort of elephant's graveyard for managers, isn't it? It's like all these managers that just probably wouldn't get employed elsewhere. There's no managers making waves in Scotland at the moment, really, that are linked with any other jobs elsewhere. And there's this whole world of talent out there. And Celtic went to Australia and got Ange Postecoglou. That, presumably, I mean, just sort of branching off a wee bit when you're looking at Aberdeen about to appoint their next manager, maybe Hibs. Surely teams can take a bit more inspiration for what's happening at the top of the table here and be a bit more imaginative in their recruitment and a bit more imaginative when it comes to managers.
Well, I think there's deeper problems than that in this country that just basically prevent that, because I sat and listened to Sports Sound's reaction to Jim Goodwin's sacking, right? And yeah, Jim Goodwin should have been sacked, you know, before it got to that stage as well. They were just kicking the can down the road. But I listened to the reaction to them getting absolutely gubbed off Hibs. And well, bear in mind, this is a BBC, so it's the national broadcaster, the flagship football podcast for this country. So it's the you know, highest ranking Scottish football podcast. Do you know who the highest ranking independent one is, though? Never mind. We winked to camera there. But in terms of chart placing, but I listened to that, and it's full of guys or wringing their hands about too many foreign players and people who don't understand what the club is all about. They don't get Scottish football. All this stuff. There was people on there criticising the attempt to create a player trading model. No, what you should do, you shouldn't buy players in order to sell them. What you should do is keep them for 5, 8, 10 years. It's people who are stuck in the 80s, right? And I'm not saying that's indicative of the whole of Scottish football, but that's the BBC, and they're on there talking about how they want basically Scottish football to be back when it, like,
it's like culture again,
1983. Yeah. So I think what probably needs done in Scottish football is to maybe introduce a little. I mean, look how Celtic are doing Ange Postecoglou.
Even like you rewind the clock back a wee bit and you look at like Hibs under Sean Maloney. Now, I can't distinctly remember Sean Maloney's tenure at Hibs, and I can't remember how bad or good he was, right?
But it didn't last long, really.
It didn't last long, but that doesn't defeat my point. I doubt very much they would be in a much worse position with Sean Maloney than they are with the new guy. No. And Sean Maloney's a young, up and coming manager. He's just got a job at Wigan there as their first team coach. That showed a bit of like interest and characteristic from Hibs looking to appoint somebody. Jim Goodwin, young up and coming manager, but he was still that like distinctly Scottish manager who just done okay with a Scottish team. You know, the front runners for the Aberdeen job they now are like Paul Lambert, and you're thinking that, I mean, no offence to Paul Lambert, Celtic legend at one point, a good manager, but is that just gain up?
Yeah. Give it Lenny to end the season. Come on.
They could do a lot worse than Neil. See if you're going to go down the route. See if you're going to go down the route of a Paul Lambert, you might as well get Neil Lennon. Neil Lennon would do a lot better than Paul Lambert. I love him.
Yeah, I thought they could. I mean, the even the idea of Aberdeen going out and picking, let's say for example, a Dutch coach or sort of German or something, it would be ridiculed for day one. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Look at Ange Postecoglou, the manager of Celtic, absolutely pilloried.
Who was his replacement? They could do a lot worse than Kevin Muscat. I don't know if he would come because they're quite a big team over there, but it's, as you say, or as we're saying, give us, as stakeholders in the league, give us something here.
No. Weirdly, I thought about Kevin Muscat earlier, just that it has nothing to do with management. But see, when you were talking about how you can't do that in the box, if that was anywhere else in the pitch, all of a sudden, while you were talking, I thought of the time Kevin Muscat, I'm sure, got sent off for being a defender in his own box, or conceded a penalty for being a defender in his own box, and he stamped on the guy that was lying at his feet. He was in control of the ball and he chose to stamp on the guy that was lying down, conceded a penalty for it.
You know what's going to happen after us, don't we? After we've ridiculed the league and ridiculed Martindale and all that, and we're never going to drop points and we're going to jinx it for tomorrow. Yeah.
See, on that, Martindale, before, just to close this off as well, I've not got a problem with him pointing to the budget, right? The constraints that he's working under, because see, to be honest, as distasteful as we find his chat about football and the style of football, he is doing a remarkable job with the budget and the resources at hand. Where my problem is that on the eve of playing against Celtic, saying that we are the, you know, points per pounds champions of the country, is that it heavily implies that he is doing a better management job than anyone else in the country, including Ange Postecoglou, and it is yet another dig at this, but they just spend loads of money, so that's why they win games. It's pish, and I'm frankly tired of it, to be honest.
I'm convinced that's the next battleground. I don't think it's any accident that Michael Beale started to comment on how much money Celtic have got. David Martindale's comment on how much money Celtic have got. That'll be the next thing when we, eventually, if we win the league, it'll be, they bought their way to the league and all this sorts of carry on. Seems like a good place to wrap up, though. Thank you so much for watching. Thanks to everyone who listens. Thanks to everyone who subscribes. Support us on Patreon, patreon.com/20minutein. You can get extra content from us, or leave a comment or retweet us. Many ways you can help us. We'll see you next week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Do you ever feel like your brain is on overdrive and your mind is constantly racing? The plans, worries, and to-do lists are never ending. Calm can help your mind take a break from the noise by softening anxiety symptoms in the moment and helping you cope with day-to-day stressors. Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, giving you the power to calm your mind and change your life. For listeners of the show, Calm is offering an exclusive offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/stressless. Go to calm.com/stressless for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/stressless.